When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hi everyone, and welcome back to Crosswires, the technology podcast that looks at the cool, the nerdy, the ethical, and all everything in between. And today we are going where many podcasts have gone before, I'm sure. Today's a good day to podcast. Sorry, you saw I changed the episode title. I thought, yeah, it's gotta be that. Look, folks, as many of you know, I am a huge Star Trek fan, huge Star Trek nerd. It was a huge part of my childhood. And this week's returning guest, and, you know, it's always an honour when a guest comes back. I feel, well, I guess I haven't driven them away. Gideon Mayhew from the Icon Factory is back.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, James. Really appreciate being back, especially to talk about Star Trek. I'm always up for that.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I was reaching out on Mastodon, and I thought, oh, I'll just tag Gideon and see if he's interested. Like, yeah, I'm up.
Yeah, twist my arm. No.
Come on. Well, you see, I was going to like try all my charm to get Sean Ferrick from Trek Culture to come along, but I couldn't find any contact details for him. He's obviously, probably for valid reasons, particularly hard to contact. So, but I thought, you know what? Let's get, because it's very obvious you're a Star Trek fan from certain things. And yeah, so before we get into our talking points, just in case anyone missed your last episode, which, by the way, do go back and listen to, we'll link it in the show notes, because it's an epic, especially given everything that's happened since then. But Gideon, quickly, do you want to tell people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a designer and a founding member of the Icon Factory, iconfactory.com. And we've been designing and developing icons, user interfaces, apps, games, anything you can think of, really, for the last 25 years. Holy cow.
Wow. So,
and I was on previously to talk to you about the whole stuff that happened at Twitter, unfortunately, and Elon getting rid of third-party apps, one of which we make, Twitterific. And that was what we discussed last time, and thankfully that is in the past.
Indeed.
Now, so I'm happy to be over with that.
Was it weird, though, having to put, I mean, I have to ask, because we said we'll talk quickly about what's going on at Twitter. Was it weird having to push out an update that basically said, if you don't need your refund, can we not do it? Was it a bit of a, like, pushing out an update that effectively told people how much Twitter sucked?
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, I really have to say kudos to Apple for allowing us to do that. You know, basically for putting out an update in the App Store that did nothing more than allow people to say, no, we don't need our refund. I honestly didn't think there were going to be that many people that would opt out of that refund for their annual subscription that, you know, they couldn't use. But There were a lot of people, and, you know, it's really humbling to be a part of that. And especially since the only way the people would know about it is if they launched the app.
Yeah.
You know, months after that, it didn't work anymore and found this message inside saying, help us out and say you don't need your refund. And there were a whole lot of people that did that, and it was very, very cool. It helped us quite a bit with that massive refund that, you know, we had to process.
And did Apple facilitate the opt-out then? Was that a thing that they made possible for you guys to do? Because I know Tapbots did the same with Tweetbot as well.
Yeah, they did. And again, kudos to Apple. This whole thing was unprecedented, really, in the App Store. So, I mean, usually when an app is removed that has subscriptions, there's a sunset period and users are allowed to slowly cancel their subscriptions so that they don't have to be a part of this. But because of Elon and pulling everything all at once, suddenly there was no sunset period for us or Tapbots or other third-party apps. And so they put us in this unprecedented situation. And thankfully, Apple was very flexible. They helped us a lot. I really can't say enough kind words about them, you know, during this whole episode with Twitter. And it helped a lot. And especially for a small company like us, it really did help. And I'm sure it helped Tappods as well.
Awesome. And look, let's just be really honest. Things have not gotten any better at Twitter. We lost more API stuff. We've lost protections for protections on hate speech. Russian state accounts have been allowed back on. It's a swamp.
Yeah. And then this week they lost their blue checks, their verified check marks. And so now anybody can impersonate anybody else.
By just paying, $8?
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's so bad.
Oh, my favorite one, Bo, my favorite joke I've heard this week is obviously, you know, thankfully, you know, no one was harmed, but the Starship explosion, someone posted that space denied SpaceX API access.
Yeah.
And on that segue, all right. That's good. That's good. All right.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. So look, we should probably, before we get into the tech. So the idea today is we're going to talk about the technology of Star Trek and look at kind of maybe what has been inspired from Trek and maybe even the other way around, because things certainly have changed a lot in what we see in Star Trek compared with, I mean, to spoil later on in the episode of the original series. But I guess we should probably talk. We will try and keep this spoiler free. If you hear Star Yes. Trek noises, it's because we couldn't. But Star Trek Picard Season 3. Wow.
It was great. I really enjoyed it. And that's coming from someone who, I mean, I've always been a lifelong Star Trek fan, but I'll be honest, I did not really enjoy Picard Seasons 1 and 2, especially 2. And you know, the whole time travel back to our time, LA, and it just, they seem to be struggling with the plots on those. And, but man, this season is quite different. This season was awesome. And it's really what the show should have been from the very start. I wish we had 3 seasons of this instead of, you know, what we had, because it would have been so much better. It was very satisfying. Of course, the whole season was a love letter to Star Trek fans. It just was. I think we're all grateful for that. I know I am. I just, yes, it was a lot of fan service and a lot of Easter eggs and so many inside things. And, you know, Star Trek fans are just going crazy over what they did with it, especially long-term next-gen fans. And I'm perfectly fine with that because it was so much fun. It really was fun.
And just, you know, without spoiling anything, some of the things they did, the little things and the little nods. I think one thing I want to say, the musical cues, when certain ships were shown that maybe we haven't seen, and then little jokes about certain people maybe destroying a certain enterprise.
Yes.
Yes. Can I ask you a question? When a certain person got into the helm position in the last episode, did you get nervous like I did?
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. There's so many of those little moments in Picard Season 3, too. They do it over and over again, and it's hard not to spoil it, you know, because there's so many of it, and you don't want to spoil it for people. I want them to be able to see it and enjoy it the way I did. If you haven't seen it, it really is. If you love Next Gen, you have to watch it. You really do have to watch it. You'll love it.
And you can watch it, too, and I would say almost... I would argue you don't need to watch Season 2 of Picard.
No.
Season 1 might be helpful for some context on where certain people are at. I'm more of a fan of Season 1 than Season 2. I enjoyed Season 1.
Yeah.
But you can watch Picard Season 3 standalone. And certainly in the UK, it's on Paramount Plus. I think that's true in the States as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Paramount Plus is actually becoming... we've Strange New World Season 2 coming out this August, I believe.
June 15th.
June 15th. Thank you. I hope that's the UK release date as well. I really hope that is our date as well, because last time we were so far behind, it was untrue. But we will see. All right, let's talk about what tech in our daily lives now is, I think, undeniably either inspired by or a natural, yeah, this was always going to happen. And I think, is it fair to say the first one probably needs to be the pad, P-A-D-D.
Right, from next gen. I mean, they basically are iPads. And yeah, it's pretty obvious that that is a direct line from Star Trek to reality. And it's, as with anything, it's hard to say how much one thing influenced the other, but you can't help but see the similarities between the two. I mean, one of the things I've done in, you know, as a creator is I've made interfaces for iPhones and iPads, and using those devices as the basis for those futuristic interfaces. In this case, you know, the L Cars, interface from next gen, they just look like they belong on those hardware. They look like, you know, that's what they should manifest. They're so well designed. Mike Okuda is the one that designed those, and he's always been a big inspiration of mine. It's easy to draw comparisons and see the compelling nature of that hardware. But yeah, I mean, there was even a form of a pad back in the original series, you know, those big, I got the gray things that the yeoman would hand to the captain and sign
with the lights. Yeah, the lights. Yeah.
The blinky lights at the top and stuff. Those are the early pads.
Can't be any worse, Bill, than whatever they handed to Kirk in Star Trek V with the big the big panel that read, was it like system failure or failure on it? Like, why was there such a big panel to say that the device had failed? Like, is that is that expected behavior? Is it like, oh yeah, we know this thing's going to fail? Because it's a very, because we didn't read beyond that captain's log, we didn't really see tablet-like devices in the TOS movies.
No, not a whole lot, no. And I mean, I think the first time I really remember a tablet-like computer in science fiction was in 2001, A Space Odyssey. You know, Poole and Bowman are eating, and they're watching those newscasts from Earth. There's like a flat tablet screen that's resting on the table in front of them. Of course, those are really CRT screens inset in the desk and everything. But, you know, that was, I think that's the first I can remember in science fiction of a thin, portable, tablet-like computer device that we used, that probably eventually evolved into the tablet that we use today.
Really interesting. You know, and flipping franchises for a second, what I always loved is in the Stargate franchise, because it was set now, they ended up using actual currents. Like, so Stargate Atlantis was all based on Dell. So, you know, dude, you got a Dell literally in a Pegasus galaxy. But they were using, you know, like different tablets, but weren't, I think maybe using some stuff at first I thought, was that a mod book? But it wasn't. It was some proprietary thing, because way before Apple created the, well, I'd say way before, yeah, a good few years before Apple brought out the iPad, I remember being very excited by them. Was it the Axiatron mod book?
I don't remember that one.
Oh, I'll put a link in the show notes. It was basically converted, obviously, white plastic, plastic MacBooks. Someone converted it, put a Wacom digitizer in it, and made it into a tablet Mac.
Yeah.
And it was incredible.
I always loved the ebook. Remember the ebook from Apple, the green, the eMate. I think it was the eMate.
I had one.
That thing was like, I had a Newton message pad myself, and I loved that thing. I adored that thing when it first came out. And I remember the first time I took it to the grocery store, I had my shopping list on it, and I'm walking around in the grocery store with this fairly large piece of hardware in the shopping cart, checking stuff off with my little stylus, you know, like, pachoo, 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 that little poof sound effect that the Newton would make.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was the coolest thing since sliced bread. I love my Newton so much.
To be fair, that is probably closer to those, you know, the big tablets that Kirk and Co. had in TOS, but Yeoman would have, because that was clearly, if I remember correctly, that was pen driven.
Right.
So yeah, yeah. The Newton would have been much more like those, which, look, I never got to, I had an E-mate. I was loaned an E-mate to see if it would be useful for schoolwork because of my eyesight. It was, except for the fact that my our school just refused to accept anything that wasn't Windows or for the first part of my school career, Acorn Archimedes. So if it wasn't Archimedes or Windows PC.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That stinks.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but like around this sort of time, and certainly when the iMac came in, the iMac was hugely popular in US education. And I think Mac was much more embedded, wasn't it? Like Apple IIs were huge.
Yeah. I remember in high school, my high school got an Apple II GS in the library, and they had Mac Paint or Mac Paint Deluxe. I can't remember. It was the one with it had King Tut on the box, King Tut's mask, the Egyptian mask on the box. And I wanted to use that thing. So I convinced my computer science teacher to buy that piece of software for the school so that I could use that app, you know, and nowhere else had a GS. I couldn't even, you know, imagine using it. And then our school got one and they didn't have any real software to run on it. So it was just sitting in the corner of the library doing nothing. And I'm like, you have to get this app. I need to be able to play with this computer so bad. And thankfully he did. And man, that's probably where my love of computer graphics and stuff started. Fond memories.
Nice. And it's really interesting. As you said, like, we're going to talk a little bit about Elcar's UI and General Trek user interface later on. But as you said, Elcar's just – so just for those who don't know, because this is a very nerdy episode – LCAR stands for Library Computer Access and Retrieval System. I think I got that right.
Yeah, I think you did.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay. And it was introduced in the next generation, but it's probably it became Mike Acuda and his team it started to form more in the, I'd say maybe, what, season 3 onwards? Because season 1 and 2 had some very odd UI, and we can talk about that. But seeing the pads and seeing the different size of the pads, like the, you know, the little iPad mini-esque pads. I remember big ones that, you know, you see like Jake Sisko writing his novels on later on. And it was incredible. And it was amazing to see different cultures within the Star Trek universe have different tablets.
Yeah, but the thing that was really cool about it was the concept of cloud computing, because the hardware, like whatever you were working on, wasn't tied to that device. It was always coming from the ship's computer. You would tie into the library system on the Enterprise or Deep Space Nine or whatever, and pull up the information that you needed that was stored in the computer core, and then you would either browse it or edit it right there on the pad itself. And I think that was pretty revolutionary idea. I don't know actually when cloud computing started, so I may be talking out my ear, but it's definitely influencing there.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you've hit the nail on the head because, well, first of all, at a very basic level, something that thin with a color screen, wireless connectivity, Wi-Fi was not a thing at the time these were shown. Like,
right.
You know, I think maybe IRDA at the most, it's infrared. Bluetooth certainly wasn't a thing. And he said, this is not the processing power is all in those massive ship's computer cores. And, you know, in Majel Barrett's beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, but that human interface. And I just, you know, you see someone with multiple pads and it's almost like they were bits of paper. Whereas right. I guess now we don't really do that. We have one iPad. Well, maybe some of us have more than one. I only have one, by the way, folks. I'm just saying. But we'll switch apps. Now, I have to ask, because this is obviously mostly a joke. Do you think the App Store survived into the 24th century?
I would say not.
No, no. You don't think Starfleet went the Apple model?
Yeah. Side-loading is the thing of the future.
It would have been, you know, distributed apps, wouldn't it? But like, again, it would have come from that Elkar's cloud, as it were. So very, very interesting. But what, I mean, it was interesting, though, at the same time, that you had the pads, but in TNG and DS9, communications were handled by big, bulky units, not by... I don't think I ever saw a... unless I'm wrong, I don't think I ever saw an instance of a video call of some kind on a pad. It was always on those laptop-like devices.
I think that's probably the limitation of the production of the show.
True.
They wanted to, you know, have video conversations on large view screens of the ship or of the station. I mean, Picard did have video calls on his desktop computer.
Yes.
And in his ready room, which was interesting too. When you think about it, if you go back and watch those old episodes of Next Gen, for the 23rd, 24th century, that thing on his desk is really bulky. It's very thick, and the screen is at least 2 inches thick.
Yeah.
And it's not this, like, hologram projecting, you know, no bezel, no chrome kind of thing that just sits on your desk. It's this, like, blocky, laptop-y thing, you know. So that wasn't very future-forward-looking. You know, of course, since then, hardware has become pretty much non-existent. Everything is projected into the air.
Yes.
In Picard, all of the controls are holographic or virtual or HUD. And there's very little actual screens. But then they come to Picard season 3 and they do this awesome, man, I just fell in love with it. On the USS Titan, the ship, which most of the story takes place, all the screens of the displays and the graphs and everything are built into the consoles of the ship, and they actually curve up onto the walls. They go from the desk surface to the wall surface, and they curve as they go up. There's not like this hard break from the horizontal surface to the vertical surface. And not only that, but the graphs and the information displayed also travel across that curved surface up to the side. And that blew me away. I was just in love with that. And, Okuda explained on his Mastodon and his Twitter and that was a very intentional, and that he worked closely with the production team there to design that and create that. And so much so that the entire closing credits of Picard season 3 is all loving passes and pans over these Elkar's displays.
Oh, with many Easter eggs
filled with Easter eggs, filled with them. And of course, they're slowly actually revealing the plot of season 3 as they're shown. You know, from week to week, we don't understand a graph or a bit of data, and then we see an episode and it makes sense. And I love that, like that foreshadowing of the series this year. It was just really masterfully done.
Beautifully done. And Michael Okuda is, and his wife, I believe is it wife, Denise?
Yes, Denise.
Denise. Those two, between the two of them, I think Star Trek Encyclopedia behind me, this is their book. They wrote this.
Right. Yep, they wrote that.
It's a good book. That's a proper hardback. I've swapped out the retro coloring book for this episode, folks. Sorry, Neil. I know. I owe you a beer in a couple of weeks, all right? Let's move on to communications, because we just talked about this. Now, look, TOS obviously had Lieutenant Uhura with that big silver thing in her ear. If that ain't a...
Her Bluetooth.
Yeah, right?
All right.
I mean, because I think me and you are both of the vintage, shall we say, where we remember the first generation of Bluetooth headsets where you looked like an absolute idiot.
Yes. Yep.
I think I had.
I do remember that.
I had a Jabra headset, but you literally, I think it was silver. Again, wireless. you know, wireless audio, wireless headphones, wireless monitoring. I'm wearing wired headphones because that's just a choice I made. But I mean, these, by the way, like genuine, like, so my in-ear headphones broke. I went to the local pawn shop, you know, like the exchange shop, and found a pair of classic Sennheiser HD202s for £5, folks. So I'm over the moon at those. But wireless audio, wireless communications. I mean, you know, we go from a flip communicator to comm badges. And I got a thing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you can buy a comm badge like Bluetooth thing, can't you? That you actually.
Yeah, that you can take calls with and speak through. It's awesome. One of my friend Troy Gall, he got me a few years ago, he actually got me a Bluetooth communicator that's the original TOS communicator that you can connect to your phone and take calls and everything with the communicator from Star Trek, the original series. And I have to say that that was probably the nerdiest thing, but also the coolest thing. I love that to death. So yeah, there's gadgets now for everything, so you can feel like you're in Star Trek, and it's awesome. You speak of those Bluetooth headsets. Do you remember that episode of Doctor Who where the whole world was taken over by based on they were like their Bluetooth headsets had like an alien signal transmitted?
Oh, the Cybermen episode. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
you gotta wonder. Well, I mean, but the scary thing is. But now our wireless headphones have, I mean, look, I have had AirPods. The fact that our wireless headphones now have our voice assistants in them. I mean, you know, going back to TNG where they'd tap the comm badge, you know, computer, where is Commander LaForge? Commander LaForge is not on the Enterprise.
Right.
You know, or, you know, where is, you know, or, well, you know, the internal comms, you know, Picard to Riker or, and I always wonder, like, if you're, how would you have a private, genuine question here, which I've never really understood. If you were wanting a private conversation remotely, how would that happen? Cause like, would everyone hear your comm badge? I would assume so.
Well, in next gen, you had to tap it in order to activate it. And, you know, initiate something, but it was Star Trek was very unclear about that because sometimes they would just be standing on the bridge and they would say, computer, where is Commander LaForge? Blah. And the computer would respond. Other times they would tap their comm badge and make the request. And I think that they're trying to work their way through that kind of, what is the protocol for the voice assistant, the computer on the Enterprise, and how does it respond? And that I think is some of where we have come to closest to Star Trek.
Yeah.
The whole notion of Alexa and Siri and voice assistants in general helping us. Speaking of that, I just triggered Siri. See?
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah. I mean, they're always listening. They are always listening, and it's kind of spooky. But it's also super cool. I love being able to just get up from my seat in my living room and walk into my bedroom. And as I'm walking, I can say, so-and-so, turn off the lights, and the lights turn off.
Yeah.
And that's Star Trek to me. It's so Star Trek. It's great.
But I mean, talking about, you know, where is Commander LaForge? You can ask Siri if you've got find my family or find my friends or, you know, family sharing enabled. You can ask Siri, where is such and such a person? Where is, you know, my mom, you know, my partner? And it's very cool. I love, hang on, let me see if this will work. Hey Siri, turn on my bedroom light. There we go. And yep. You can see the light check. Like literally, I mean, it's wonderful. And this is, you know, being able to ask weather reports, be able to ask your email and stuff for your email. Siri has its flaws.
Right.
But, and look, this leads us on nicely to, we're talking about these voice assistants. Like, you know, obviously in the series, because it's very interesting where you go from, for me at least, you go from the very robotic computers in TOS and the TOS movies to the Enterprise computer in, and of course, you know, the Defiant, Voyager, everywhere else in later seasons, where that's an intelligent discussion, you know, and things like, please do not address this unit in this manner. And then you've got, you know, Sonia Gomez being polite to the computer just before she spills hot chocolate and starts feeling up yeah. Patrick Stewart, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. In Q Who, that was one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, yes. Because that's a Borg episode, the first Borg episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The first Borg episode.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that it's fascinating, like with the advent of Chat GPT and what that is adding to the mix of the potential of voice assistants. One thing that I've always noticed, like, there's a Next Gen episode, first season, it's called 11001001, where Picard and Riker get fooled into sticking into the holodeck while these aliens called the Bynars kidnap the ship to help save their planet. And they program the holodeck to be alluring to both Riker and Picard so that they stay in there. Once they realize that they shouldn't be in there, they come out and the ship is at red alert and the holodeck opens and Picard starts asking the computer all of these queries in a row, like, why are we at red alert? And what happened? And what is the current status? And where is so-and-so now? And, you know, so on and so on and so on. This little scene of him talking to the computer that way is like the holy grail of voice assistant technology. They want to be able to have context or contextual conversations and queries so that you start with a question or a query, but then every other query after that is related or in some way in the context of that original query. And so you can continue that question, that line of questioning to find related issues or interconnecting issues that are not necessarily direct questions. You know, like the first question is, why are we at red alert? And the computer explains it. It's like, is that the case now? Or what has changed, or blah, blah, blah. And the computer knows what you're talking about and it actually responds accordingly. That has not been possible to do that kind of thing with Siri or Alexa, to chain queries that are seemingly unrelated, but in the context of the conversation, have them make sense. And now with the advent of Chat GPT and other artificial intelligence systems, I would argue that it is possible.
Mm.
I would say that, because if you go talk to Chat GPT, you can carry on a seeming conversation with it about totally unrelated things, and yet the responses seem connected. They seem to make sense. It's fascinating to watch how this evolves, and I'm really curious to see if Apple or Amazon or Microsoft or whoever takes advantage of it and plugs it into their voice assistants. I hope they do. To take the best parts of that and leave the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope they do, but, you know, and I at this point, I don't know what order episodes are coming out in terms of this show, but we talked with Dr. Catherine Fleek about, you know, the ethics of that, and what about your private data that you'll be maybe passing into it? We actually look at that, so it's great to look at. Yeah, this is a really positive thing, but then also go back and balance that. You know, what do we need to be aware of? So it's really interesting to talk about that. And yeah, as you said, they had full on conversations with the computer, and that ran through all that sort of TNG and beyond era. You know, and obviously it's very interesting again. The way that voice interfaces worked in different sci-fi. I mean, obviously, the prime example being Hal,
right?
Who I believe had a little run-in with Phil Schiller one time. I think.
And the commercial.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. The Apple commercial.
Yes.
Yep.
That made me smile. Well, wasn't it on stage as well? Didn't we have him interacting with?
Yeah, with Mac at Macworld or yes. Something, if I remember correctly.
I'll find the link. But then, you know, again, we go. But there's one thing I wanted to ask you about with voice interfaces in Trek, and it's again mostly sort of like a looking at how things are. But you know, you go back to the original series, and particularly, you know, I think of Star Trek III, you know, where computer requests security access, you know, and it's a very specific code word response, isn't it? It's not, they're not saying, hey, computer, we want to blow up the Enterprise, this beautiful refit ship, you know, because there's Klingons about to board it. Spoilers for Star Trek III, by the way. I'm sorry, but I still get a little emotional when I see that ship go up. Yeah, there's a few things that get me, like
Yar dying gets me every time. I hate it when Natasha dies. Yeah.
Yeah, that was such a shame because she was, I mean, fun fact, I'm sure you already knew this before. Listeners, did you know that her and Marina Sirtis were originally auditioned for each other's roles?
Yeah, I think I did know that. Yeah. Would have been interesting to see her as Yar and her as Troy.
Yes.
I don't know how that would have gone.
No, it would have been very interesting because that was one of the speculations, by the way, for season three of Picard, that it was going to be, what's her name? Her Romulan daughter.
Oh, Seska? Or not Seska, but...
Oh, you have to look this up now.
Our geek cred is falling.
It's bad. But we knew Seska.
Yes, from Voyager.
Yes. That's
from Voyager.
Yes. Oh, Sel... Hang on, yeah. Please stand by. I should know this. I really should know this.
Commander Sela.
That's it. And I mean, that's a whole. There was rumors that she was going to be the main villain in Picard season three, but obviously that didn't turn out to be the case. Let's look over. But speaking of codes and stuff, it all obviously is someone who is a bit of a security nerd as well. At first, you think, okay, codes like, I mean, joking about 000 destruct zero or those codes, you know, or 16309, passwords and authentication codes in Trek are always a fascinating one because people say, well, okay, Picard 47 Alpha Tango.
Right.
Not a particularly secure password, especially if you know you've got people hearing it, right?
Right.
Or, you know, was it, Crusher 22 Beta Charlie and War 37 Gamma Echo from First Contact. But I might be wrong here. I'm going to make an assumption that it isn't just the phrase, it's the biometrics on the voice.
Yeah, of their voice. Yeah, totally of their voice, which you can, there's a couple episodes of Next Gen where it has to be that person speaking the code, and then there's the one where Data takes over the Enterprise and he impersonates Captain Picard in his voice and speaks that extremely long, drawn out code to encrypt the computer.
Yes.
The one that's like 50 digits long. I don't know how long it took Patrick Stewart to record that line of dialogue, but it had to have been absolutely nuts. Him just saying digits 0555692525, you know, over and over. Oh my God.
And at that point, hilarious. At that point, Brent Spiner's thinking, I'm very glad that that's not my line.
Yeah, but he still had to lip sync it. That's the thing. Like, yes. He had to lip sync it, you know? So crazy. Your point is well made because even if it was biometrics, as we see now, with deepfakes being extended to audio of people's voices, it's becoming increasingly easy to impersonate someone, both their appearance and their voice. The voice of Darth Vader in Obi-Wan recently, the Obi-Wan series on Disney Plus, was not James Earl Jones. It was computer generated. It was that deepfake audio technology. You would never know it. I mean, it's just a really, really good approximation of James Earl Jones's voice. The same for Mark Hamill's voice on parts of The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, wow.
When you hear Luke Skywalker speak, it's not Mark Hamill.
His voice has changed. It's changed so much he can't do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they're using technology to generate that dialogue from those actors and make it appear that it, how they did when they were that age. It's becoming scary good.
It is.
Very good.
Now, interestingly, I was thinking about this for the bit in the last two episodes of Picard where a certain voice is heard again. I don't think that was deepfaked. I think, and again, try not to spoil, I think the audio was actually from Chain of Command. I think it was actually the, I think that is from when Jellicoe handed back command to Picard in Chain of Command. I think
that may very well be it, but don't forget too. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Majel Barrett recorded like hundreds of lines of extra dialogue before she died. She worked with the producers to record, like they gave her pages and pages and pages of stuff to record as the Enterprise computer so that they could use her in the future if they needed to. She agreed to do that and she did it. So they have yards of stuff of her speaking that we'd never even heard or they've used in anything. It could be part of that.
That's interesting. Okay. I might. Yeah. And it's really scary. But I mean, cause in parts of TNG, you go back to maybe like, I think first season where they're about to blow up the ship and Riker and Picard put their palm prints down. And in, is it the Adversary in DS9, final episode of season 3, where Sisko's just been made captain and the Defiant's taken over by a changeling. Kira and Sisko have to put their palm prints on the Defiant's computer. On a very different note, let's just be honest, Starfleet security is not that great because there's an episode of, okay, there's an episode of Deep Space Nine where somehow Quark, a known criminal, is allowed to board the USS Defiant to go and visit Worf. No security checks, no nothing. He's just somehow able to go on that ship. The most heavily armed Federation starship in the sector, and Quark could just walk on the thing.
Yeah, it's all in service of the plot. If the plot requires something, then security can suddenly be lax. And if people have to be kept out or there's some kind of threat, a Borg or something that can't be, then all of a sudden the shielding is impenetrable. I love that in there's that one episode of Deep Space Nine where the Dominion is attacking the station and the station has been armed with to the hilt with photon torpedoes and everything. And they're firing back at the Dominion and they're destroying them with one shot. You know, no shields or anything. They're just like pew, pew, pew. And the Dominion ships are blowing up. And all of a sudden, Wayun's like, what's going on? Our, you know, Federation has never been able to withstand our shields, blah, blah, blah. And they just explain it away. Like, I've never learned to underestimate the Federation. So, like, in all the previous seasons of Deep Space Nine, the Dominion was unbeatable.
Yeah.
And, you know, their shields were impenetrable and blah, blah, blah. But in this one episode, all of a sudden, the Federation can penetrate their shields and start destroying them. And that's just, you know, the story.
No, but hey, at least you get beautiful lines from Jeffrey Coombs and Mark Alimo.
I mean, oh, man, yeah.
Those two together. And then I would argue also once you get Casey Biggs in as Damar with Wayun. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Very nerdy. I didn't realize until recently, by the way, of course, that he was, that him and Roxanne Biggs Dawson is because she was married to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So B'Elanna Torr was married to, which is the ultimate irony, isn't it? B'Elanna Torr is being married to a Cardassian. Anyway.
That's great. I did not know that.
So, but it's security and the whole thing. I do have to wonder. What password managers they use in Starfleet? I really hope it's 1Password. I really hope like
they definitely need longer, more strong passwords in Star Trek. I think that goes for everything, especially like Star Wars too. Like I love that a droid can just waltz up to a console, any console in an Imperial complex, input itself and then like learn all the data that it wants or turn off the trash compactors or anything else, any kind of request that a random droid out of any with no security clearance whatsoever, they can just like bloop, yes, and then the, you know, like, everything's cool.
Have the Empire, have the Imperials not heard of 802.11x, you know, authentication radius service office?
What is up with that? It's just so funny, you know.
I mean, well, to be fair, the jokes around, you know, the destruct sequences do, I think it's in season two of Picard, they make a whole joke about the codes, you know, and it is funny because, but of course at the time, you know, it was secure, that whole idea. I mean, in Star Trek II, you've got Kirk scanning his retina. Of course it wasn't.
Right.
You know.
That was a big deal at the time, though. Retinal scans and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, now we've got Face ID, and I think we're probably in a better position in some ways than Starfleet is security wise, but you never know. Now, moving on a little bit, because there's one thing that always, I'm a big fan of the original series. Let's be honest, not all of the original series is great. There are some.
No.
But then again, not all of Next Generation is great. Code of Honor.
That's very true.
Yeah, some parts of season one of TNG are not exactly pleasant watching, shall we say. But when we look back, and this is maybe brought into even more stark contrast with Strange New Worlds, and I don't know if you're a Discovery fan or not. I know it's a very divisive show. But when we see the Enterprise in the same time period, actually, well, before TOS, but with modern interfaces, how do you, do we just accept the fact, and I guess even maybe in the movies as well, certainly, you know, like Wrath of Khan, and my favorite one is Star Trek V, we have all touchscreens, and then 6, we go back to push buttons because obviously something's gone wrong. Like the beta test didn't quite work out. But do we just accept it's because of the production limitations in the show, or is there an in-universe explanation that makes more sense?
No, I mean, I think there's always a tendency of Star Trek nerds and geeks to want to explain those things and to try to reconcile it within the universe. The whole notion of the Klingons is a perfect example of that, how the Klingons have changed from the original series to the movies to Discovery, which are really out there.
Yeah.
And now suddenly they've come back and they may look more in Strange New Worlds. They're going to look more like the Klingons that we're used to from Next Gen and the movies.
Which, can I just interject, which is very interesting given what they try and do in Enterprise. They try and
Right, they explain the whole thing with a virus and genetic engineering and everything. That was totally an attempt from the people who run Star Trek to try to reconcile those visual differences for fans. Was it successful? I don't know. So, yes, there's a tendency of nerds and geeks to want to do that. They want to make everything make sense. And I must say, I had to reconcile it myself when I watched Discovery and Strange New Worlds. And even to some degree, Enterprise, because the bridge of the Enterprise with Scott Bakula is way more advanced looking than the original series. But it's prior to the original series in the timeline. It's the first ship before Kirk's Enterprise. And so you have to kind of suspend disbelief, I think, to some point. You have to kind of go with the flow. It just works better in your own mind if you do that. I think I don't mind it so much on Discovery and especially Strange New Worlds, because there's definitely an attempt to have a visual coherence with the original series. They're just not doing stuff out of the blue. The bridge is similarly designed to Kirk's. They have these red railings all the way around the bridge. The controls make the same sound effects. There's the same audio cues that there are in the series. So they're definitely, you know, they're taking bits and pieces from what we know and love and combining them into something new. That brings me to that one scene in the Trials and tribulations on Deep Space Nine when Sisko and the group go back to the original Enterprise and they're walking around and Dax is just standing there and she's looking at the tricorder and she's like, you know, running her fingers along it and everything. She's, I love classic 23rd century design.
I had black, one of these
silver highlights. Yes, I had one of these. So, I mean, that and that line, that whole bit right there where Dax is like explaining the look of the tricorder, how it was retro-ish to her and the others, even though, you know, we know it doesn't make any sense. You know, it doesn't make any sense in the timeline of the show, but there's a nod there by the writers to try and reconcile that. And I love when they do that kind of thing. They do that a lot in Star Trek.
I do love, and Matt, I mean, look, we'll talk about some favorite Trek moments, but that is still, that the way they did that episode. And now, can I ask you, like, completely speaking of Strange New Worlds and Discovery, obviously the original Enterprise, the Constitution class that we saw in TOS, has a certain look to it. And the refit in the motion picture and beyond, certain look. Now, I will be honest, that is probably my, that is maybe my favorite version of the Constitution class Enterprise. But I think, I want to put this out there for folks, the job they've done in Discovery, and maybe more so in Strange New Worlds, of making it look like you can actually believe that is the same ship that Kirk took over, mm-hmm. I think is incredible.
It is. It really is. I love it. I really love it. They have done an excellent job with the production design of Strange New Worlds. Everything about it, the uniforms, the sets, the ship design, the audio, all of that, it's really, you can tell that the people who are involved with Strange New Worlds love Star Trek. They love Star Trek. They grew up with Star Trek. The props are the phasers and the communicators and everything are just lovingly designed as odes and homages to the original series, but with a slight twist to modernize it and bring it forward. All of that is just so well done. Really, I applaud them all the way around. I can't wait for season two.
I will say, this is my take, Strange New Worlds is exactly what I would imagine Star Trek would have been if a Pike pilot took off but was done now. I can believe that was the intent for Star Trek, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I adored season one. Season one was just
so good.
Tour de force of Star Trek and so badly needed. It's just everything about Strange New Worlds is my Star Trek. It's what I grew up with. I love Anson Mount as Pike.
Yes.
I love Ethan Peck as Spock. He's a great Spock. He really is. And the woman who plays Chapel too, she's amazing. They're all great. They really are, but they also have great material to work with, and they come from a place, again, of love. They know the significance of what they're doing. So.
Yes. The only thing, I was a little bit disappointed that the new engineer did not turn out to be Mr. Scott. That was my only, but then again, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. All right, let's move on, because I think, look, you're an interface designer. You obviously have worked a lot on app design. I think we have to talk about LCARS and its general. I think maybe look at like the user interactions in LCARS. I mean, I think we need to look at LCARS rather than maybe look at, because we could get into a whole mile on the original series UI. Arguably, I think as you mentioned, Enterprise felt very much more as an ancestor of LCARS than obviously TOS did, as we explained. But what is it, do you think, about LCARS? What is it that makes it just this? I mean, I'm going to make a bold statement. Almost the perfect sci-fi UI, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's a testament to Mike Okuda that he's gone and designed this interface that is still being used 20, 30 years later in Star Trek. You wouldn't think that. You really wouldn't think that it could stand the test of time and still feel futuristic. it still feels like it is the future of interface design somehow. And I don't know exactly what the answer to your question is. One of the aspects of LCARS that makes it is it's simple. It doesn't try to be too detailed. Like with these HUD displays you see in Marvel movies and things like that, there's like digits, little digits everywhere. And
spinning, you know, things.
Spinning, yeah, all that. LCARS doesn't try to be that. It's got these large sweeping curves and bars of color that are very simplistic and ordered. And so I think it's probably an axiom that says the simpler something is, the more elegant it is and the more forward looking it is. And I think that is what has helped it to stay feeling relevant through all of this. That, of course, colors are updated all the time and typography is updated, and so that helps too. The colors that were used on the original Next Generation Enterprise bridge are not the same colors that are used in Picard season 3, of course. So, and when I went to design my own version of LCARS for iOS, I played around with colors and tried to find more modern colors. And every show has its own color palette.
Yes.
Every Star Trek has its own color palette. Voyager has blues and grays, and so does Lower Decks to some degree. And Deep Space Nines, there's a lot of pinks and tans and things like that because they're more Cardassian-ish colors than Starfleet colors. And the judicious use of those colors really helps to communicate what you're looking at, because the audience, that's all LCARS is about. The audience needs to see a screen and home in on the information that's relevant to the story very, very quick and ignore the rest. And it's all about quick communication, quick concept of the script or the plot. And that's all there is, you know. Other than that, everything else is just window dressing to help you feel like you're in the future. They do this a lot, and I don't know if you – have you watched any of Star Trek Prodigy at all?
I need to. I have not yet. I've seen clips.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Prodigy has a lot of LCARS-ish futuristic interfaces where the crew interacts with that. A lot of hologrammy kinds of things. At its heart, it's also LCARS, but more futuristic. They pushed it more. But it's still beautiful.
It's set before Picard, if I understand correctly. I don't quite know the timeline.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And look, something just came to me as well. There are lots of really good sci-fi UIs. We talked earlier about 2001 A Space Odyssey. I think that really, like, clean cut. I would argue mm-hmm. the Alien franchise UIs are actually very clean cut as well. We on stream, we play Alien Isolation on a Friday night. And again, but very retro because it was based on what was available at the time. So they shifted like the Commodore PET, for example, into the timeline of, you know, into the future of Alien. One show that I think it's not that it doesn't do a good job, but its interfaces and its screens feel dated, whereas TNG doesn't. And the only reason I'm saying this, and you'll appreciate this, I won't take a screenshot of this, but
I know what you're going to say. I have an idea of what you're going to say. Yep, Babylon 5.
Babylon 5, yep. Yeah.
Yes, they do feel way dated. And you can tell it's a 90s thing. It's totally all the bezel buttons, the drop shadows on the buttons and the big chunky type and all of that. Yeah. Poor Babylon 5. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, neon lighting everywhere.
Yeah. They don't hold up well at all, unfortunately.
No. I mean, the show itself holds up, like the story holds up. I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan. And
me too.
I'm very excited if Joe Straczynski gets his reboot. I want to see what happens. I really do. I'm very excited.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the interfaces on Babylon 5 are just way dated, and I'm not sure. It's just the design choices I think that they made on that show on the Babcom systems.
Yeah.
And things. They feel way old, and they totally date the show.
Do you know what I think it is? I think we have to remember what, at least in season one, what all the graphics were done on. A Commodore Amiga. Right. And like that is
what in the early days of Next Gen, the interfaces weren't actually displayed on TV screens in the set. They were lithographs, or they were printed out, and they were printed and then put onto the surface of the sets and lit from behind. So they didn't have to actually come up with graphics that could work or press or interact with or anything like that. They could go beyond that. But I think the people of Babylon 5, they actually did design things that had to be displayed on CRT TV screens on the set. And so that limited what they could do, like you're saying, with the technology of the time. And it shows the difference.
There's one example of where they had to update the graphics in the remasters of TNG, because when obviously they did TNG, there's it's the neutral zone where they find the people frozen, you know, sent off into, is it the neutral zone where we find the survivors from what, the 20th century, and they're going through one of the lady's ancestries or descendants rather, sorry. And in there, on the original version, if you pause and like do a bit of enhancement, the names of a family are the first five doctors, either the first five or the first six doctors. That's been removed in the remasters because you can now see the Elkar's interface. And I don't think they could get away with actually using the actors' names. So very interesting. I think it's time to have a little bit, because look, I think it's been, I love Elkar's UI. Now, we want to give a little bit of a plug. If you want some great Elkar's wallpapers for your phone, your Mac, or your iPad, we got to support Icon Factory here. Wallaroo, is that the right name for a?
Yeah, Wallaroo, yeah, in the App Store. Search for Wallaroo, Wallaroo. And, my Elkar's wallpapers are part of that. If you want the full Monty, as it were, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/iconfactory, and you'll get a whole lot of additional things that are not available in the App Store version. You get a red alert version and special widescreen Mac display versions of Elkar's, more variants and all of this other good stuff. I worked a long time on all of those wallpapers. They were a total labor of love. So I appreciate anyone's support of our Patreon and Wallaroo.
And it is great to see people. I've seen some, and the one thing I wish didn't get shut down by CBS, whatever they call themselves, is the Stage 9 thing where you could go on a virtual, you could go around the Enterprise D, and then there was a system, I think it still exists, but like a System 47 Windows app, which was Elkar's, that you could run.
Right. Yeah, on your computer. That was awesome.
And you could, you know, eject the warp core, and everything just felt Elkar's, like seeing, but my great example as a final piece on Elkar's, in First Contact, where the trio are unlocking the mag clamps on the deflector dish, everything about that interface is just right, as in, yeah, it's achieving its goal.
Yeah, specialized for that particular point in the story, too. And again, all about communicating to the audience what is important, like what they're trying to do. They're trying to unlock the deflector dish from the ship. And so you can see on the Elkar's displays, like locked, unlocked, the process of locking it or unlocking it. And that was the part that needed to be communicated clearly, quickly, in the point of, you know, these Borg trying to take out the team and stuff. So again, kudos to Okuda and everyone else who works on that and designs it, because they do their job very, very, very well.
And there's so much we could talk about memory storage, going all the way from the original tapes to the isolinear chips, which I'm sorry, if SD cards and memory sticks, like Sony's memory stick being a great example of what was clearly inspired off of isolinear chips.
Right.
You know, but we could spend, but I think let's wrap things up with, I think I've got to ask you, as a fellow Star Trek nerd, some favorite Trek moments, or maybe one favorite moment and one out, maybe one, I don't want to be generous, one or two outstanding episodes that you really think define Star Trek.
From any Star Trek series from or any, particular
Star any Trek? Any Star Trek series, whatever you... It can be a pick a mix. You can pick from... Yeah, it's literally a free-for-all at this point.
Well, one of my... I'm just going to go out in left field. There's a lot of things I love about the original series, and I have watched maybe the Doomsday Machine maybe 100 times from the original series. I love that episode of Star Trek so much. But just to be out of left field, so to say, I will go ahead and say, take me out to the holosuite from Deep Space Nine, because that episode is, I didn't appreciate it as much when I was a kid when I watched it at the time. But I have watched that episode of Star Trek now, I don't know, dozens of times, and I love it so much. I just love it. It's, for those who don't know about it, it's Sisko gets challenged to a baseball game by this cocky Vulcan captain, and he of course he has to take the challenge, and so he recruits all of his crew to play baseball after 2 weeks of training in the holosuite. And none of them have played baseball except him and
Jake,
his son.
Yeah.
And so they have to learn how to play baseball. They have to learn the rules. They have to learn the mannerisms and all the stuff that goes along with baseball. And along the way, it's just a joy. It's like 45 minutes of a joy of a show. I love that episode so much. It's so light and fun. And Aaron as Nog and Max as...
Oh, Rom. Yes.
Rom. They are so funny. They are hilarious. They're all really good, but...
Those two in particular. And my...
Worf.
Worf.
You know, like, kill him. You know, he's like...
Kill the enemy.
Get him. Yeah, kill him. Instead of tagging him out, I want to kill... You know, you find him and kill him. The whole episode is great. I love Take Me Out to the Holosuite. And the scene at the end in the Quark's bar.
Yes.
Where they're gloating to the Vulcans. I love it.
For me, in my episode, a great moment is René Auberjonois practicing his umpire stuff in his office.
Yes.
Rest in peace, René and Aaron. It's so sad. I mean, honestly, so sad. I loved, by the way, in Discovery that they did give that little tribute to Aaron. But it was the USS Nog, which was Eisenberg class.
Right.
That was just beautiful. That was nice.
That was tragic when he died. It really was.
It was. And, you know, but, I mean, I think for me, if I'm to pick two episodes, it's going to be Best of Both Worlds in TNG, especially given, Picard season 3 and Picard in general. But then in DS9, it's a really tough choice, but I think it has to be In the Pale Moonlight.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
With Sisko's monologue, Can I Live With Myself? Oh, just.
Great episode. Also, great Garak episode. Yes. Andrew Robinson as Garak shines in that episode, and I really wish they had brought him back for Picard season 3. I was just holding my breath to see Garak appear at some point in Picard season 3, and I'm
because you caught everyone else
that he didn't. Yeah, right. Everyone else, but not him, and no one really from one person from Deep Space Nine. But
hang on, one really who.
Kind of from Deep Space Nine. Well, I mean, you have Worf, of course. Worf was on Deep Space Nine, but yeah. No, I really wanted, we were talking about Sisko. Deep Space Nine doesn't get the love that any other series gets. I swear, even on Lower Decks and some of these other shows, they do reference Deep Space Nine sometimes, but I don't, have we even seen a Deep Space Nine character appear on any other Star Trek live action series? I don't think so.
Oh, yes, we have. Yes, we have. Julian Bashir was in TNG.
Right. But I mean, since those shows went off
since
on Disco or Strange New Worlds or Picard or... No one from Deep Space Nine has appeared on those shows.
No, really. You make a really... No, I mean, I guess Lower Decks obviously have that whole that whole episode. Was it just keep circling, just keep circling the pile? Like, that was beautiful. But that's, I do consider Lower Decks Trek, but it's definitely more off to its, it's not even off to its own thing. It's not meant to be seen. I don't even know. Is that even, no, I think that's unfair.
I think Lower Decks is canon. I think you can consider it canon. And they're going to do this Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds crossover this season. I don't know if you know about that.
I did. I don't know how on earth that's going to... Because, like, what's the setting there? Is it, like... As long as it's not, like, Visa the Voyages from Enterprise, where you've got them in the holodeck.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how they pull it off. It's going to be great. You know? But yeah, Deep Space Nine doesn't get enough love. It just really is. Yeah, it's the black sheep of the Star Trek family, and we all want to know what happened to Sisko. You know, we have no idea. Wesley's come back, but Sisko hasn't. Yeah. You know,
but there's non-canon stuff that Sisko is back. But whether or not, again, I guess what you call beta canon. Actually, it's book stuff in books. And I don't know if that's what actually happened. I'm waiting. Oh, wait, if we get this spin-off series that might be happening after the end of Picard, that could be the vehicle for him to return.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
Anything's possible.
It is.
It's just one of the showrunners has to decide that it's time for a Deep Space Nine return. Or reunion, or mini reunion, or whatever, you know, while some of these actors still are with us and can do it, because then many of them have passed, like Renee and Aaron. And, so hopefully we'll get that eventually.
Cause we lost Cecily as well. We lost Mookie.
Yes. Oh, yep.
That was sad. And I am a huge Deep Space Nine fan. That was, after the Next Generation, that was my Trek. That's what I watched. I tuned in. I was delighted when Worf turned up. And we know why they did it, to boost DS9's rating. And it worked. Right.
And it did work.
And I would say I'm with you. It's so Voyager. I liked Voyager, but quickly, the premise of Voyager, ship lost in the Delta Quadrant, low on supplies. Not able to do limited power. They threw that out the door about, what, maybe 4 or 5 episodes in?
Right, yeah.
And then what we did with
they do a lot of that. They did that with Enterprise, too. Like, the ship can only go warp 5 and can only go so far, but they ditched that. And, you know, all of these things, as the constraints of the story require, which I get. I totally understand that, you know,
Anyway, listen, Kitty, it's been such a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this all day, because being able to marry technology and Star Trek for me is always, it's probably what got me into technology is Star Trek. And certainly,
right.
You know, and being able to talk to someone who's, you know, actually, you know, another Trek nerd, and also someone, you know, who's been designing these UIs. Since Michael Okuda is on Mastodon, I will make sure he gets a mention in the social post. And Michael, if you're listening, thank you. Seriously, for all the work that you put into LCARS. I will say you have someone here who has LCARS like screensavers and backgrounds and would love the idea of a fully functioning LCARS OS. Like, Apple, get on that. Like, as an April Fool's joke or something, you know. Anyway,
all the interactions I've had with him over the years have been wonderful. I've talked with him a couple times on Twitter, and he is wonderful. He's a great guy. He's nothing but welcoming and accepting of fan stuff. And I Michael Okuda is just a star. He's a great inspiration, and I thank him too for everything.
And I think we probably all should give a quick shout out to, and I'm going to get the name wrong, Sternback, not Rick, am I free? Mm-hmm. Doug Drexler and Rick, basically some of the guys who designed the ships, because some of those ships are just, I mean, I could spend hours on this and we won't, but I'm just going to say the Defiant class is a beautiful ship. And Oh, yeah, just everything. Yeah, anyway, right. Gideon, where can people find out more about yourself and more about the Icon Factory? Where can people find you on social? Obviously not on Twitter.
Not on Twitter anymore. No. You can get to us at iconfactory.com. Also, my personal blog is gedblog.com. And that has links to my Mastodon account, which is where I am now. I don't post on Twitter anymore for obvious reasons. So
it would be, I mean, we don't look, folks, here's the deal. When we have guests on who still use Twitter, what we're going to do from this point forward is use knitter.com. If they really want to promote their Twitter, like we try to discourage it, but at the end of the day, it's guest social media. We can't control what they're using, but we'll link through knitter.com and we'll try and encourage people to get on Mastodon. But yeah, Gideon, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me. You know, and if you ever want to talk about Star Trek ever again, don't hesitate. I it's probably pretty obvious at this point. I can talk for hours and hours and hours about Star Trek. I held myself back.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed that this is only a 1 hour, 20 minute actual raw recording, folks. I'm amazed we actually pulled that off. And ironically, I think it makes me smile, but when we talked last time, we said, oh, we need to get you back on to talk interface design and iconography. Well, no, the next time you're back on is to talk Trek, and that just makes me smile so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a blast.
All right, folks, we'll roll the outro. Thanks for listening to this episode of Cross Wires. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. So please drop us a note over to podcast@crosswires.net.
You can also drop us a comment on the post, or if you're a good pod user, why not start a discussion there too?
You can also join our new Discord server at crosswires.net/Discord. We've got forum channels for each episode, and we'd love you to join the discussion there.
You can also follow us on Mastodon at crosswires@mastodon.social.
And of course, you can find the show in all the good podcast apps and all the really bad ones too.
More of our content, head on over to crosswires.net/YouTube for all our videos, and keep an eye on our Twitch channel at crosswires.net/live. Our upcoming streams.
If you like what you heard, please do drop a review in your podcast directory of choice. It really does help spread the word about the show.
And of course, if you can spare even the smallest amount of financial support, we'd be incredibly grateful. And you can support us at ko-fi.com/crosswires. That is ko-fi.com/crosswires.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.